Welcome to the True Health Revealed podcast. I am registered dietitian, nutritionist, Kathleen Zellman, and I am joined by my fabulous co-host, Harvard lifestyle medicine educator and founder of FlexMD, Dr. Tom Rafai.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. Today, we are talking about weight loss maintenance. It's a new year, it's a new you, and we're looking at what are the weight loss strategies that will help you keep the weight off. And to bring this topic to life, we have the expert. Dr. Holly Wyatt is professor at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, and the vice chair of clinical programs in the Department of Nutrition Sciences. She's also the co-founder for The State of Slim, a transformative weight loss program that specializes in weight loss strategies for weight management and transforming your life. And I think it's really interesting that Dr. Wyatt, with 20 years of clinical experience, brings to us also her own personal experience of having struggled with healthy body weight earlier in her career. She has researched successful losers, more than 10,000 successful losers in the National Weight Control Program. And she was the medical director for two seasons on the ABC TV show Extreme Weight Loss. She knows about weight loss and weight loss maintenance. Welcome, Dr. Holly Wyatt.
Welcome, welcome.
Hello, great to be here. Thank you for having me. That was a great intro.
Oh, I'm so excited for you to be here. So let's kick it off by talking about what have you learned about successful losers and what do they do? What do they do that we need to start doing in order to keep that weight off?
Well, there's a lot of things, but the first thing that I think is the big difference is people who are successful at keeping it off, they think of it differently. You know, it's not just continuing to lose weight forever. They lose weight, they do different strategies to get it off. But what we've learned is then they kind of switch strategies. They actually have a different game plan when it comes to weight loss maintenance. And a lot of people don't think of it that way. They just kind of think about it, whatever I do to lose the weight, I got to do it for the rest of my life. And that's one thought in that you've got to be thinking about your weight long term. We know it's a chronic condition. We know it takes treatment and strategies for a very long period of time. But what works best to get the weight off is not necessarily what's going to work to keep it off.
So what is it that, I mean, if you've, so it doesn't matter what diet you choose, essentially. If you choose any number of plans, lots of them can be successful. So once you've achieved that goal, what do you need to do and how do you need to make that kind of switch in order to maintain that?
First of all, you got to realize you got to make the switch. And so many people are like, well, I just want to lose 5 more pounds. I've lost 40 pounds, but I have 5 or 10 more left, and they don't switch soon enough. So first of all is recognizing I need to make a switch. I need to go into weight loss maintenance. Maybe I can lose more weight in the future, but for right now, it's time for me to switch. Most people don't do it. I think that's one of the number one reasons why people tend to gain weight back or regain is they don't realize when it's time to make the switch. They don't make that switch. And when it comes to what do you have to do, you know, there are some similarities, but physical activity has proven, this is where the science and the evidence is pretty consistent out there. For weight loss maintenance, physical activity, I always say, is driving the bus. It doesn't mean that nutrition's not there, doesn't mean that it's not important, it doesn't mean that mindset and routines and environment all aren't important, but you've got to have that movement, that physical activity, that exercise, whatever you want to call it, pretty much has to be dialed in for your body to be able to maintain, not to lose, but to maintain your current body weight. So you've got to kind of switch and make that physical activity the biggest priority. I always say it drives the bus. There's a lot of people in the bus, but if you don't have a driver of the bus, you're not going to go very far in weight loss maintenance.
That is such an important point, and I'm sure you've had a multitude of different experiences of when it's right to introduce that in a particular patient with maybe a background history of not really enjoying it, or maybe some gets from the get-go great, but otherwise it's not always so easy, and when there's an opportunity and make sure they know how important it is for maintenance. Very, very good point. You also, I think, I love the idea of not waiting too long before the strategy switch. If you know that, and you know this better than we can clarify as well, only about 1 in 5 people who try to lose weight are able to achieve and maintain even just a 10% loss for 1 year, And 40 pounds, that would mean, you know, someone's 400 pounds, that they obviously would have lost way more than 10%. And maybe you can even discuss that threshold, 10, 15%, and how powerful that is versus what many people think is, oh, that's only 10 to 15%. Really? That's associated with like an 85% reduction in type 2 diabetes over several years. But sure, I guess it's not much. Any comments on that?
That's the problem I have, even with my state of slimmers. And I talk about this all the time. They always want to lose more. You know, from a health care standpoint, we have lots of good data that 10%, huge benefits, right? Huge benefits in type 2 diabetes and so many of the comorbidities. But I have found for a lot of people, 10% isn't enough weight for them to be satisfied. You know, it's not their personal goal. It may be their doctor's goal. It may be my goal, you know, as their coach, but it's not their goal. And so part of it is talking about that, but also realizing it's okay for them to want to lose more. I always say, you know, you can lose a certain amount, we can maintain it, and then we can lose again. It's the pattern of getting there. So trying to explain that to them, but I struggle with that. They want to lose more. They always want to lose a little bit more. Even when I tell them everything, even when they know this, they really just want to lose a little bit more. And like I think we've talked a little bit about, losing weight is sexy. You know, losing weight's fun. You're buying new clothes. People are coming up to you and saying, wow, you look different. What are you doing? You have that motivation. And then when you go into weight loss maintenance, it's kind of like no one comes up to you and says, wow, you look exactly like you did 6 months ago. You know, congratulations.
Yeah.
Yes, that's such a great point. I love your idea of stop and hold and mile markers. That's so unknown, but so true. For full disclosure, and Kathleen knows this, I have binge eating disorder. I lost my youngest brother to binge eating disorder. And the idea of not pushing when someone's not ready, I can't tell you how much I'm endeared to your making that a very significant point. I have a question as far as what you think about an approach I've taken with patients as well regarding maintenance, in which I give them an analogy, and you could pick any work of art. I picked the Sistine Chapel, but I said, would you go back to the Sistine Chapel, look at it a second time, if you were lucky enough to go to Rome and see it twice, and just look up at it, gaze, and say, oh, same damn thing as last time. The maintenance of such a powerful work of art, and I guess that was my point, that only one in five are able to achieve 10% for 1 year, was that you're in the winner's zone now. And at least it's a positive psychology approach based on evidence that can at least have them accept the stop and hold. Like, you don't have to quit forever, but right now maybe you need a breather. Let's maintain this. Any thoughts?
Yes, and the body needs a breather. That's what I try to kind of tell them. Physiology, we know that no matter what plan you use to lose the weight, what nutrition plan, diet, whatever you want to call it, whatever you lose, we start to lose adherence and the body starts to fight back. And so that we know that there may be a physiological reason in addition to it, just it's hard, right, to do it over and over again, to kind of rest, but not rest where you're regaining, rest where you're maintaining. I kind of say it's like treading water. You know, when we're losing weight, it's like doing the butterfly. It takes a lot of energy. You can't do the butterfly stroke forever. You'll tire out. And at a certain point, it gets really hard. And before it gets so hard that you just throw up your hands and you shoot back down the river, you need to learn how to tread water. And it takes a little bit of energy, but not as much as that losing weight. And, you know, so that's great. And you're right. 10% weight loss, you're a winner. And so before you throw up your hands and say, I'm not a winner, and regain all that weight, you want to realize, what does it feel like to maintain it? And realize, okay, in the future, I may be able to make some advances. But yeah, don't celebrate where you are, for sure.
Holly, I love your enthusiasm. I can only imagine what you're like with your state of slimmers. So let's talk specifics. How long, so I lose 10%, how long shall I tread water before I can start swimming again with that butterfly? Is there some recommendations in terms of how to make sure that your body gets that reprieve and, you know, give me some sort of time frame before I can start trying to lose again?
Sure. We don't have great data for this, so I can't point you to a study that says for sure here is the amount of time. Here are some of the things I think we do know. We know that weight loss in most interventions and most behavioral change programs starts to wane. You know, you get the biggest bang for your buck around 3 months, and then by 6 months, most people are plateaued. So I do talk about 6 months being the max that I like people staying in weight loss, but really 3 to 4 months is probably the sweet spot, but maybe out to 6 months. We have pretty good data to show that pattern, that you lose weight rapidly, it starts to plateau, and by 6 months, most people are not continuing to lose weight. Bariatric surgery being an exception, perhaps, to that, where they go out a little bit longer. When it comes to weight loss maintenance, we don't have as good a data. For one thing, it's we don't have as many people to study, right? And those studies take so long. But from my experience, I like to say, let's rest for 2 to 3 months, if possible. And more than anything, not necessarily from studies that show that your metabolism has changed, but more it's like, can you hit it again hard? Can you adhere to a diet again? Adherence is the problem, right? You said it up front. It really doesn't matter what diet plan you've chosen. A bunch of them will work. But we start to not being able to adhere to them. So when do you feel like you can re-adhere to it? When is that mindset there? When do you have that energy again to really jump in? Because losing weight, being in that negative energy balance, does take a lot of energy. It does take a lot of, you know, structure and planning. And so for me, it's when my patient tells me I'm feeling like I can do that again. I say 2 to 3 months. I don't have great data to back that up, though.
So does it matter the rate at which you lose the weight? So the rapid loss versus slow gradual? Us in the dietitian world used to say slow and steady was more successful than fast and rapid. But does it matter?
So I think now we don't think it matters as much. When you look at those studies, what it really showed was, yeah, the people who lost weight rapidly regained a little bit more of it, and the slow losers and the rapid losers, when you would look out at like 1 year, would be at the same. They would have been maintaining a loss of about the same, meaning the people who lost rapidly would have regained a little bit more than the people who lost slowly. But the end game was the same. So I actually believe in getting as much weight off as I can safely. Obviously, we're not going to do something unsafe or, you know, extreme to the level where you're putting your health in danger. But doing as much as I can at the beginning to get as much fat burning, as much weight off as I can, because we know it works and then it's going to stop working. I know that weight loss is finite. So I want to lose as much weight safely as I can quickly and then transition them into weight loss maintenance. So I do believe in being aggressive with the goal and trying to get as much weight off as I can at the beginning. I think of it like a tool. When you use a tool over and over, it becomes dull with time. The weight loss tools, whatever you're using, become dull. And so I want to use them really, you know, use them as much as I can at the beginning to get as much weight as I can off early.
I had a chance to watch a really good TEDx that you gave. You were in Colorado and talking about why is the media obsessed with Colorado? We have plenty of heavy people here. We're not necessarily so lean. It was great. And you pointed out a couple things. Number one, you this is about predictors of success. You mentioned how those that have had a why, a purpose, a reason that really drove them. And then the other question I had surrounding that is even when that's the case, any comments regarding the social support, you know, supporters versus saboteurs? It seems to be highly predictive of someone's success if they are internally motivated, but they have, I hate to say it, but, you know, a life partner or a spouse that's really not on the same page, maybe even try to sabotage them. Any thoughts or tips in that regard? The why, of course, is a great comment too, but around that social environment, it's tough.
Huge, huge. You really hit one of the C's I talk about. I always talk about being consistent, handling the curveballs, and the third C is connection. And you actually hit both parts of connection with this question. The first connection I would say needs to be there for you to be successful is connection to yourself. Why are you doing this? You know, you're not doing it. You may have started because, you know, someone who loves you wanted you to lose weight. You may have started because your physician said something, but in the end, that's not going to be strong enough. That's an external why. Sometimes that can get you going. External motivation can get people moving. But for you to stay moving and for this to be something that you're going to work on long term, you've got to connect internally to that why. Like, why am I really going to do this? You have to make it bigger than weight loss. What's super important to you that you want to experience in your life, that you want to feel, that you want to be, that's maybe limited somewhat by your weight, that you feel like you're not able to do it. And it's super important to you, and it is because it is, and there's no right or wrong, there's no judging. It's not about what society thinks. It's not about what your spouse thinks. It's not about what the healthcare system thinks. It's about what is important in your life. And that's that why. That's that motivation that you've got to start working on from the very, very beginning, because that's what's going to keep you going long term.
Quick follow up.
So that's connection. And then connection to others.
Yes.
You know, that's the other connection. And so we take on the behaviors of the people that we hang around. I always say behaviors are contagious. It's one of the reasons why Colorado is the leanest state, because you hang around people that are doing some of these, you know, get up and then go climb a mountain, you know, or, you know, do some of the behaviors that promote a leaner body state. And you take it on because you think it's the normative thing to do. Versus some of the other states, when you go there, you don't have that connection. So connecting to others who are on a similar journey, who are doing the behaviors you're trying to do that can support you, are just as important. So minimizing, when you can, perhaps some of those people who are not supporting you can be helpful, but also just adding people who are doing what you're trying to do can also change that social connection that can be so important. So I don't necessarily think about cutting people out of our lives, but I do think about, who am I adding that can help me?
Yes.
And before we leave this, Holly, you said connections, but curveballs and consistency. Want to elaborate a little bit on that as well?
Yeah. So the other things I always talk about is you need to be consistent with your behaviors. You know, we think about, we're starting kind of January resolutions. People will be consistent for a couple of weeks. That's not going to be enough. We've really got to be consistent for months and, you know, be able to think about, what can I do consistently? So I do think that is an important one. And then curveballs is my other big one I talk about all the time. And to me, this is another big reason why people don't lose as much weight as they'd want to, but also don't maintain it, is life happens. And I call it curveballs. And you don't know what's coming.
That's true.
But do you have the tools and strategies to be able to get through the curveballs and still stay on plan? So many times I see that people get off plan because life threw them a curveball. But let's face it, rarely do we not have curveballs.
Yep.
I always say we got to be a curveball hitters. We can't just wait for the perfect pitch. We've really got to develop the strategies to hit those curveballs, to use them, and to stay on plan in terms of what we're trying to do to lose weight or maintain weight.
And in terms of the maintenance and what we're focusing on here, that consistency, what are your thoughts regarding something I've called, and I've experienced, because it wasn't, I made it up, is because it was by force of clinical care, what I call non-negotiables, and giving agency to the patient to understand, look, you know, if you have a certain number of non-negotiables, consistency doesn't necessarily mean never having, fill in the blank, whatever that is. It's how often,
yeah.
It's how much, and how those can sometimes sabotage people because they think zero tolerance is necessary, when actually a release valve, if wouldn't necessarily recommend a pile of brownies beyond my kitchen counter. That's a different idea. I call that, inviting a wolf into a house, pretending it's a dog, and then blaming the wolf when the wolf bites you. Go pet a wolf outside with an animal trainer. But that doesn't mean I don't want anyone to tell me I can't ever have a brownie. On that other end, that extreme end, I'm just going to obsess over brownies. Finding that consistency and balance, that discipline without extremism, I guess that's the term I wanted to get out there. What are your thoughts regarding that in maintenance, a discipline without extremism?
You've got to have some consistency in maintenance, but you do have more room in maintenance than you do in weight loss. So you do get some, you know, additional meals. What's required to maintain is different than what's required to lose weight. And for a lot of people, what's required to lose weight, it does require some pretty strict structure, not non-negotiables. I believe in an indulgence meal once a week for a lot of the reasons that you just talked about, to let off that steam, because if you think you can never have this, you start that poor me. Oh my gosh, I never get to have pizza with my friends. You know, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I can't do that. And so that does not lead to the mindset that we want. So I do believe in an indulgence meal, with that idea, once a week, I can have that. There's nothing I can never, I can't have at least once a week. You get even more of that in weight loss maintenance. And that's what I like people to experience. A lot of people never experience that. They either in the weight loss mode or in the weight regain mode, where they're eating everything or anything. They have no structure. Weight loss maintenance is that gray zone. It's really where, yeah, you get more indulgence meals, but you do have to have some structure. And so really experiencing what it feels like to be in that gray zone is what we're trying to do. That's what we need people to understand and be able to do, you know, to be able to keep that weight off.
Well, I love the fact that people know that they can have that treat. You can have that piece of cake or whatever it is. You can't eat the whole cake, but just knowing that you can have it is very empowering. So, Holly, let's talk about yo-yo dieting, weight loss plateaus, set points. Do all those things factor in? Do we all have that set point where our body just wants to weigh what it wants to weigh, regardless of what you can do? And what are the negative effects of going up, going down, that what we call yo-yo dieting and the weight loss plateaus?
So the set point, you know, has been, we've talked a lot of that in the scientific community for years and years and years. I like to think of it more as a settling point, not a true set point. But there is a point that kind of based on your physiology and your metabolism, and yes, genetics are involved. Some of us struggle more than others to maintain a healthy body weight or to lose weight in our current environment. So there definitely are genes involved, and different people will have to struggle or have more challenges than others. So we have that, but it's really that in combination with the behaviors and the environment that produce a certain body weight. And so while it, you know, you can think of it as a set point, I actually think of it as a settling point, because you can go in and change those behaviors, change the environment, change the routines and rituals, and produce a different body weight. And then you see this, people do, you know, lose weight, and some people are successful at maintaining it. It's difficult. I think you've got that physiology pushing back, you have the environment pushing back, but you can do it. Same thing, people are gaining weight. I always say, if there's a set point, why are we gaining weight? Because that's changing. So I think it's more of a settling point than necessarily a set point. And I do think you can be successful at changing that settling point by changing your environment, changing the social environment, routines and rituals, lots of things that are important. In terms of the yo-yo, you know, I think that there's not great data to say you're doing anything harmful. I do think it can be, you know, that's hard when you're regaining weight. The yo-yo doesn't feel good, right, to be regaining that weight. So I do think that emotionally it can be harmful for people to feel like they're, you know, in constantly losing and regaining. That's why I really like to focus on, can we be successful at weight loss maintenance? Can we feel like what it feels like to maintain it and really develop those skills so we're not going back and forth, back and forth?
And Holly, is that a slightly higher maintenance flexibility, maybe secondary, maybe to more than these two things, but at least these two? One is that there's only so long someone can go on being that strict, and while it pays off to lose the weight, that's probably unsustainable, like coming out of a gate of a marathon sprinting. Eventually you have to pace yourself, one. And then two, that's why physical activity is so important in maintenance, because you're going to need some flexibility. You're not going to be able to maintain that level of strictness. So the physical activity is really so key, at least in part, because of that when it comes to maintenance.
Yeah. You said the key word, metabolic flexibility. And that's what we really believe is going on in people who have successful weight loss maintenance. If you think about it, when you lose weight, you have to be in a negative energy balance. And that's when you're consuming less calories than you're burning. And when you do that, you burn fat. But that's really different than what needs to happen in weight loss maintenance, where the calories coming in, the calories you're eating, need to match the calories you're burning. They don't need to be different. You don't need to be in a negative energy balance anymore, but you got to match. And what you really want to happen, and this is that flexibility part, is if you eat a little bit more, you do go out and you have a piece of pizza, you do have some birthday cake, and you do have some foods that are a little bit higher in calories and energy density, then your body can react, can match. Not the same as what it does to lose, but can match so that you can actually eat a little bit more, burn a little bit more, eat a little bit more, burn a little bit more. And we think that physical activity is a key for that, not just by the calories it burns. That's helpful, right? You go out and you do an exercise bout and it burns 300 calories. That's helpful, but more than that, it actually allows your physiology to kick in and to match and to do what I think it was meant to do. But for so many of us, we've now kind of moved into an environment that doesn't allow us to get enough physical activity for it to do it naturally. So we've got to put that physical activity in to allow our body to have that metabolic flexibility. And what I love to do in weight loss maintenance is say, how flexible can you be? I mean, in other words, how many calories can you actually add to your diet and your body match. And that's something no one really ever experiments with, figures out. But that is really, I think, the key to being successful with it long term. So you use the exact right word. Metabolic flexibility and physical activity are really very important and probably the keys to success long term.
I have to say, I stood up through that whole answer.
Well, the information that I've gleaned from the National Weight Control Registry, they eat breakfast, they exercise almost an hour a day, they're consistent with their behaviors. So are there other things that people should, I mean, should we strive for an hour a day or 10,000 steps? I mean, what guidance do you have for people who are listening that want to maintain at their current level and not gain any more weight?
Well, yeah. So I always, when you talk about how much activity you need to do, it's important to say, what is my goal? Is it for weight loss? Is it for weight loss maintenance? Or perhaps is it just to prevent me from gaining further weight? And those are three different goals that probably required, would get three different answers.
Okay.
We have good data when it comes to weight loss maintenance. This is one thing that's pretty consistent throughout the literature, multiple people doing studies. And I always am hesitant to put out this number because for so many people that may be starting out, you know, are very sedentary, this seems overwhelming, but it isn't. You can break it down. You can do it a lot of different ways. But the data would show about an hour, 7 days a week, so about 420 minutes a week of moderate activity. Or the way I like to do it is I do 70 minutes 6 days a week. So I get to the same 420 minutes and I take one day off. But that 60 to 70 minutes of moderate intensity activity seems to be on average where people need to kind of hit to be successful at keeping the weight off. Now, that's a very different number than the activity that's required for heart health, maybe different than really activity that's required for weight loss, and probably is more than is needed necessarily to just prevent you from gaining that 1 to 2 pounds of weight some people gain each year. So different amounts. But for weight loss maintenance, that 420 minutes a week, 60 to 7 minutes a day, is really where the data would say that's what I need to get you at. So one of the things I tell people is when you're losing weight, begin with the end in mind. The physical activity, you can ramp it up slowly while you're losing the weight so that you have it when you're ready to switch to weight loss maintenance.
You know, Holly, you brought up something so that TEDx talk again, I'm going to look back on. The point you made about, I think you were just saying it there too, think about maintenance from the get-go. Don't think about that at the last minute, but how do you imagine yourself in terms of maintenance in the long run? I can assure that in my clinical experience, that the same thing, when people have some idea of what life is going to be like in maintenance, they tend to do better. But a question I have for you, one is that I can't help but ask. I mean, the pandemic stay-at-home orders, we saw the data, people gaining massive amounts of weight. It's kind of disheartening. Do you have any words of motivation or support for those that, what was the number? What, 29-pound gain for those who are already in the, you know, BMI-driven obesity category under lockdown orders? That's dramatic. What did you see, and what are your thoughts regarding helping people who are probably, many are feeling so downtrodden after that kind of an experience?
Yeah, you know, we saw different people doing different things. For some people, they didn't, you know, gain that much weight. There's obviously people that, you know, had a different situation, you know, different experience. So I would just say, you know, you can do this. I always say, yes, I do believe with beginning with the end in mind, but at the same time, I always say action conquers fear. So, you know, a lot of times just getting started is the best solution. And, you know, believing that you can do this. Is getting some help, you know,
yes.
Definitely getting some support, getting some structure. You don't have to do this on your own, but believing in yourself and believing you can do it and just getting started. Like I said, action conquers fear, and I know that's hard, but that's, to me, what the big first step
action
is.
Conquers fear. I like that.
That's excellent. Well, one thing we haven't addressed yet is just the natural weight gain that seems to occur with aging. So you just referred to that 1 or 2 pounds that you gain annually. Are you suggesting that that's common for people as they get older? They just start to gain a little bit more weight? And if so, is the 420 minutes per week adequate for that?
Yeah, so in general, we know our population is slowly gaining. We haven't figured out how to stop the population from gaining weight. So I think in general, the whole population is gaining. As we get older, there tends to be a tendency, I think, for people, our bodies kind of change, our muscle mass changes. We don't necessarily do as much physical activity. So there's lots of reasons why we may start putting on weight, especially as we get, you know, older, hormones change, et cetera. And so that can be, you know, we definitely can see that. In terms of how much physical activity, probably would be a little bit less than the 420 minutes to simply prevent that 1 to 2 pounds of gain. And I would say as people get older to stay physically active, to do some resistance training, to try to maintain your body composition is going to be very helpful so that you don't get in a situation where your energy expenditure is decreasing and then you're still eating as much as you were and you kind of gain the weight. So staying functionally active, moving more, keeping those muscles going, you know, with resistance training, I think that becomes more and more important as we get older because the natural tendency is for our energy expenditure to go down. And when that happens, I think we do tend to put on the body
big,
weight.
Big fan of that, resistance training. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of cardiologists who are on it, who confirmed, at least for heart health, that those minutes, those 400 or so minutes, can be distributed. There's no evidence anymore that says they all have to be bunched up to 30 minutes, 30 to 60 minutes, so many days per week. It can be in distribution of physical activity throughout the day, whether you're what I call a neat freak or non-exercise activity time and step counter. You don't have to do 10,000 and then sit all day. There might even be some metabolic advantages to breaking it up. Is that the same in terms of weight maintenance, that the distribution you can distribute it and gather it in any way, shape, or form that's realistic for you?
We think the most important part is to get it. And so you can absolutely break it down. You know, for heart health, we probably think around even 30 minutes a day gives you some cardiovascular benefit. It goes up when we're talking about weight goals, but the same thing applies in that you can break it down. What we do in Stay to Slim is I like to say we chunk the activity. It's just like, you know, I say, you know, write either 70 on your mirror if you're going for 70 minutes that day, and every time if you do a 10-minute walk, minus 10. Now we're down to 60. All right, now I'm going to, you know, take now I may go and do a video, and that was 20 minutes, and I'm going to minus 20. And throughout the day, just, you know, kind of work at breaking that down into chunks and not being overwhelmed with that number. But when you break it down into little pieces, you'd be surprised at how easily you can get to that goal. And so you can absolutely break it down.
Well, and also people who are setting their New Year's resolutions, they say, I want to get more exercise, but that's not great planning. You really need to figure out how are you going to do it. And I love this. I love the mirror, writing it down, having your goals, and figuring out how to chunk it up. So, Holly, you want to talk? I thought the new International Weight Control Registry, I thought it was fascinating that it's NIH funded and launched last year, but that there is a citizen to scientist partnership. So it seems like a collaboration that's really interesting to learn more and gain new insights into successful weight loss.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. This is something that is, I think, going to change, hopefully give us new data, new knowledge, and really change how we go about helping people manage their weight. And the idea is, we don't know everything in science. We know that. And when it comes to weight, I think there's a lot of missing pieces. And we've learned some things over the years, but really, we haven't made near as many, you know, we really have not conquered this problem. And so one way we really want to try to get some new things going, some new hypothesis, some new ideas, is to go out and get everybody's story. For us not to say what are the best strategies, but for us to ask the people out there, what strategies are you using? What strategies worked? What strategies didn't? So we're really, this is for everybody who has been successful at losing weight, hasn't been successful, is thinking about losing weight. We want to hear your story, basically, and then take all that data, and from all the data that comes in, really start to see what new things can we learn. We know that individualizing is probably a key thing, that one size doesn't fit all, that we need to be better at saying, this is what these individuals do. You know, can we match treatment to individuals? And I think the International Weight Control Registry is a way that we can get some data to even start doing that better.
So how do people add their stories? Just go to the International Weight Control Registry.org and sign on?
Yes, so go to the website, and that is exactly how you can, if you were, it's a study, so that you would sign up and be consented for a study where we basically ask you questions and you tell us, instead of us telling you, you tell us what you know. And that's really what we want. So definitely the website would be the way to get involved.
Perfect.
Wonderful. So a couple of questions regarding one psychology and the other one regarding food. And I guess it's maybe a two-part question with the psychology. If you can comment on, you know, scale obsession, we had a discussion with John Ferret over at Baylor, and I was talking about how I've seen patients take off wedding bands before weighing in. He said, "Tom, wait a minute, I've seen people take out contact lenses." I said, "Okay."
Yeah,
and
that was funny.
And how do you break? I mean, we have to measure, but there are different ways to measure. I've seen some patients literally just use a dress or a jacket or something else. So the concept of scale obsession and it's kind of cousin, this, you know, emotional eating and where psychologists can come into play to help people through those type of psychological barriers to health and weight loss and weight maintenance, but without necessarily obsessing about them to a fault.
And you really use the right word again, is we don't want to be obsessed with it. But I am a firm believer that we do need to know our body weight, just like we need to know our blood pressure, just like we need to know our blood glucose values if we're, if we have type 2 diabetes. And so I do believe in weighing as a way to kind of measure, but we have to untie that from that emotional piece. And so I believe when people get on the scale every morning, it's a number, it's a piece of data. People in Stay to Slim, we do that and we work through that emotional piece. It's just like brushing your teeth. This is something I do. It's not about who I am. It's not good or bad. There's no judgment. It's a piece of data I use to help me in my journey. And it's very uncomfortable at the beginning for some people, but the more we do it, they start to get more comfortable with it. They start to understand how weight goes up and weight goes down and water weight and their own body and their own patterns, which actually becomes important in weight loss maintenance. So while I don't want people to be obsessed, and I really understand the emotional baggage that can be tied to weight, I personally believe it is a piece of data that we need to use to help people be successful. So it is something that I work a lot on, and if you can have people helping you with that mindset shift, that's critical. But it is something that I do use in my programs. I do use body weight. Where I always say I'm helping people lose weight. I need to know what the weight is so that we can help. You know, I can help you.
So
with that.
Desensitizing with objectivity and explaining. Look, not everything is with a scale is related to how many calories you ate. There's a lot of other reasons, and then. Hopefully that gets them to be more objective about it. We've coined it in patients I've worked with, the useful idiot. In other words, you know, it's convenient. It's not a DEXA body composition analysis, but it's there for you. So don't make such a big deal out of it. And that's a great way that you've worked through the process with them by explaining all the different factors that can cause fluctuation. I think that's great.
And use other things too. So it's not I do use, you know, a waist circumference or a pair of jeans if they want to use that, or you know, you can. It's not the only thing that we measure. It's one thing.
That's great.
Well, I would say, though, that it's really disheartening if you are following your plan and you're doing everything that you should do, and yet you get on the scale every day and you don't see the numbers budge, and sometimes you see them go up. So would you agree that maybe not everyone should weigh daily and that maybe once a week is enough or a couple times a week just to avoid that kind of obsession that, you know, can come from and the frustration that can come from not seeing the results and still being really arduous about your attempt to lose it?
Yeah, the problem with weighing once a week is that you may... You know, because weight does bounce around, when you only get one value once a week, you may get a value that is high or low. You don't see the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so really what I try to do by doing it once a day is it becomes routine. It's like brushing my teeth. I do it. I can gather that piece of data and I can start to see patterns. And then what we look at is not the individual weights. We look at patterns over the time. So we look at an average. So we take all seven and we average it for that week. Is the average going down? Or did I hit a new low that week? And if you hit a new low, meaning the lowest value you've seen in a while on the scale, you can feel pretty confident you're losing body fat. And that bounces the water. That just naturally happens in our body. And so I take those kind of daily values and we put it in a way that we can see change over time. If they weigh once a week, then they may miss a low and they may just happen to hit the high and then they totally don't think anything's going on. When really a lot, they've been very successful and their weight really has changed, but they missed it. So that's why I do it every day.
Mm-hmm. So you should weigh daily, but look at it and average it out to come out with an average weight loss or an average number for the course of the week.
That's what we do in our programs is I'm trying to show, like, let's look at patterns. How can we best look at patterns over time and not, I always say, if you gain 3 pounds in a day, it's water. There's no way you've gained 3 pounds of fat. If you lose 3 pounds in a day, we don't like to hear this. It's not fat either. It's water.
It's unlikely. Right. Yes.
Right. You didn't, unless you were, you know, in the military and out there being, you know, physically active all day long, you did not lose 3 pounds of fat. There's just, it's physiologically impossible. So looking for patterns, I think, is the key with weight.
And I'm glad you said that. We found as well that if we just gave them permission to not have to worry about weighing in the clinic, because many, despite us admonishing them, please, you know, please don't starve yourself and dehydrate, they would anyway. And just say, look, weigh yourself in the morning after you poop and pee, and we'll trust you. I mean, you know, it's okay. We're not the police here. And we found
that's a great way to approach it. Right? And that way you're not saying it's not important, because it is important. Right? It's just like blood pressure is important.
And you get rid of a lot of that noise, because of course I want you to drink water and if you have a healthy meal, and yeah, a pound salad is going to put a pound on the scale, but it's not really in you. It's in that tube from your mouth to your anus. It's not really part of your body. But a question regarding key foods, if you've felt that there are any, and or food features, you know, whether it's a food or fiber, intact fiber, protein, and maybe some comment in that arena, maybe regarding protein, about meal replacements. We know that they help for loss, and we've seen some use in maintenance, but what are your thoughts regarding key foods or key food features, anywhere from fiber, protein, meal replacements, or whatever else that you see kind of have some level of consistency in terms of weight maintenance?
Well, once again, you kind of got to think, I'm always thinking about weight loss separately than weight loss maintenance. And so there are certain features that I think are helpful for weight loss, although we know that there's a lot of different strategies that work. It really is about adherence. And then when it comes to weight loss maintenance, some of those I keep intact, but you adherence is going to start to fail. It's not the same thing. Weight loss maintenance is not the same thing. When it comes to weight loss, I believe that lean protein is helpful. Not only for kind of satiety and helping with adherence to the diet from a hunger standpoint, but also from trying to really promote fat loss and not burning our lean muscle. So I believe in combining a lean protein with a carbohydrate. I believe increasing vegetables, and obviously that comes with fiber and then having some good fats. I believe meal replacements have a role. There's lots of data if you can do that. So having maybe not all your meals replaced, but one or two replaced can make it easier. So sometimes we use that. All those things really can play a role. And once again, there isn't one nutrition plan for weight loss. And there really isn't just one nutrition plan for weight loss maintenance. It really is what's going to fit best, what that individualizing kind of piece for the person.
Excellent. Holly, this has been a fabulous conversation.
Oh, yes.
Any last parting comments, although we've really covered lots of it, but just give you an opportunity if you'd like to end with any pearls of wisdom.
Yeah, you know, I think to me, the biggest thing is everybody always wants to know what to eat and how much to move. And that's super important. And I always say, I'm not going to bet on you in Vegas if you're on the cookie diet. You know, that's not going to work. So having an evidence-based what to eat, how much to move is super important. But how many times do we know what to do and we don't do it? Or we do it for a very short period of time? So I say, no matter what you decide to do, if you decide to go on a diet or eat differently and do the activity, work just as hard on that mindset. Why you're going to do it, how you're going to get through the curveballs, what's important to you, how am I going to make this bigger than just losing this weight? That's the piece that so many people say, I'll deal with that later. I don't want to deal with the mindset or the woo-woo, or they call it everything when I talk about it. But to me, it's when you couple that piece with the what I'm going to do, that's when the real magic happens. That's when you get that long-term
success. Nice. And do you have a favorite social media or a way for people to connect with what you're doing?
Yeah, Dr. Holly Wyatt. I am on Instagram and Facebook and also Status Slim. So both of those are out there. So would love to connect on social media.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Holly. We really appreciate your time. And I'm inspired. I think lots of people are going to be inspired by all that we've discussed today. So thank you kindly.
Oh, thank you for having me. Love talking about it.
Great practical information. Thank you so much for bringing Holly on, Kathleen. I thought she was really practical. You know, I was expecting, you know, maybe a little bit more science is great, right? You know, science is great, right? That's what we're based on. But she spoke down to earth. I think there was a lot of actionable points people could take to heart.
Well, she had so many wonderful examples and analogies, and her enthusiasm was amazing. I mean, she's definitely the kind of doctor I would want to go to if I needed that support from a physician to lose weight. So I thought she was great. You know, she was involved early on in the National Weight Control Registry. Now she's also involved in this International Weight Control Registry. So they're looking at what we can tell them, what, you know, every person out there who's had success or failure can share. And Tom, you know, you addressed it briefly, but I urge you to share your journey.
Well, I appreciate that. It's something that I talk about, I think, hopefully just enough to identify, but you know, it's a tough topic, but I appreciate that. And how do people, by the way, connect with you online, Kathleen? What's your favorite place for people to find out what Kathleen is doing and offering?
Oh, I'm on social media, obviously, like all of us, at KZelmanRD. That's my Instagram, and on LinkedIn and Facebook, Kathleen Manning Zelman. And I have a website, KathleenZelman.com. And you, Tom?
Very cool. Very cool. That's great. Yes, my master class is dpm.drtomrifai.com, DrTomRifai.com. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/DrTomMD and Instagram, Dr. Tom Rifai. And of course, we would all love if you would support this effort with a True Health Revealed podcast by making a kind donation to the True Health Initiative, our nonprofit at truehealthinitiative.org.
And that's where the podcast will be located as well. So indeed, it was a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you for listening to the True Health Revealed podcast. We appreciate your time and hope you'll join us again. For more information on today's episode and to subscribe to future podcasts, please visit truehealthinitiative.org. And to help us continue the fight against fake facts, please consider donating to our nonprofit True Health Initiative.